Welcome to Radio IQ's Virginia On Demand for this Tuesday. It's a daily podcast from Radio IQ featuring the top stories across Virginia. I'm Jeff Bossert. The Virginia Tech Board of Visitors has backed away from a move that would have eliminated most of its living learning programs. Roxy Todd has this story.
Living learning programs are residential spaces for students with shared experiences or similar academic programs, like first-generation students, engineering, or those in recovery from substance abuse. The move to close them would have allocated more on-campus housing for freshmen. The Board of Visitors first proposed eliminating its LLPs in April, but postponed that vote. Many students spoke out against the resolution. In a committee meeting on Monday, the university's vice president and provost, Julie Ross, said LLPs attract students to Virginia Tech.
The impact that eliminating our living learning programs would have on enrollment is very difficult to predict. But I cannot recommend program elimination as a prudent action at this time as we face the complicated dynamics of the enrollment cliff.
Board member Nancy Dye, who is chair of the Academic Research and Student Affairs Committee, asked to withdraw the resolution and suggested the university begin a yearly review of the cost and participation of the LLPs. The committee also voted to approve the construction of four new on-campus residence halls. That resolution will go before the full board when it meets Tuesday afternoon. In Blacksburg, I'm Roxy Todd.
Note of disclosure, Radio IQ is a service of Virginia Tech. On Monday afternoon, a procession of law enforcement vehicles transported the body of a Carroll County Sheriff's deputy from Roanoke to a funeral home in Mount Airy, North Carolina. Deputy Logan Utt was killed Friday night near the town of Cana when officials say a man opened fire on Utt and another deputy. The other deputy was hit in his ballistic vest and survived. The suspect was arrested Sunday just across the state line in Surry County, North Carolina, and was extradited to Virginia Monday. He's being held without bond in the New River Valley Regional Jail. 20 years ago, Virginia enshrined a ban on same-sex marriage into the state's constitution. A U.S. Supreme Court ruling nullified it. And this fall, Virginians will have the chance to remove it from the state's founding document and replace it with an affirmative right for same-sex couples to marry. Brad Kuttner has this report.
June 1st is the start of LGBTQ Pride Month, so it was fitting for advocates of same-sex marriage to start their new campaign to roll back Virginians' ban on the practice Monday. Here's Democratic Delegate Kirk McPike of Alexandria, who was flanked by his husband at Monday's event.
Every Virginia family deserves to be treated with dignity, protected equally under the law, and to be free to build a future without government interference. Virginia is for all lovers. Let's make sure our Constitution reflects that.
The legislative process to get the amendment before voters did include support from a few Republican lawmakers, but those conservatives who oppose the amendment plan to push Virginians to vote against it. Lynchburg Senator Mark Peek, who said his faith teaches him marriage is between one man and one woman, is among them. He said his supporters would like to see all three amendments, including expanding felon voting and guaranteeing abortion access, fail this fall.
I plan to campaign vigorously against all three of the remaining proposed constitutional amendments. Of course, the one that they already passed was found to be unconstitutional. So we've got one down, three to go.
Peek was referencing the redistricting amendment the Supreme Court of Virginia struck last month. There are legal challenges to the abortion amendment dealing with the language of the proposed referendum as well. Unless the state's high court intervenes again, Virginians will vote on all three amendments this November. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Up ahead, we'll have a story of survival amid climate change from Sandy Houseman, the red-cockaded woodpecker. Sandy's report from Sussex County is up shortly. As the June 30th deadline for the budget approaches, leaders in the State House and Senate are battling each other and the governor for leverage. Michael Pope explains.
The House will be returning on June 18th. And senators will have their own session the Monday after the Juneteenth holiday weekend. Former Republican Delegate Chris Saxman of the business group Virginia Free says the governor needs to be careful she's not getting steamrolled by members of the General Assembly.
Governors got to be very careful when they call special sessions. When you give the legislature more power and more time to meet, they're going to use it, and not to the governor's benefit. So a lesson for future governors, don't call special sessions unless you absolutely need it.
Bill Leidy is a former chief of staff for two governors, and he says Governor Abigail Spanberger is doing everything she can to use her leverage as governor.
Beginning with the downfall of Governor McDonald, and the Ralph Northam blackface scandal and the lack of understanding the role of a governor by Governor Youngkin, the legislature for well over a decade has pretty much been able to ignore the office of the governor. And what we see now is a governor acting like a governor and doing her job.
Virginia has never had a government shutdown, but that streak will end if the House and Senate can't come to some kind of a compromise with the governor before the end of the month. I'm Michael Pope.
Sentra Health, the main healthcare provider in the Lynchburg area, is laying off about 1% of its workforce. The company says it's part of a broader restructuring. Of the approximately 90 impacted employees, about 35 are eligible to move to other open positions. Sentra says it has also reduced staff size over the past few months through attrition and leaving open positions vacant. The company says it continues to hire for other key positions, especially clinical roles and services like nursing. The bus driver who police say caused a fiery and deadly crash on Interstate 95 last week now faces more criminal charges, and court records show he'd been cited twice for speeding in the last 2 years. Jing Sheng Dong was indicted Monday on additional charges of involuntary manslaughter. Online court records show Dong was previously convicted of speeding in Virginia in 2024 and was charged in March with speeding in Maryland. The Stafford County Commonwealth's attorney says Dong is still hospitalized. He'll be transported directly to a jail once he's well enough to be released. State police say Dong's bus failed to slow down for traffic early Friday morning, smashing into several other vehicles, killing five people and injuring dozens. Appalachian Power is planning to upgrade its grid infrastructure in Botetourt County for a Google data center. Mason Adams has this story.
Google wants to build a data center in Daleville, but data centers use a lot of electricity. So Appalachian Power is rolling out a project to upgrade its grid transmission in the area. The utility wants to replace 17 miles of 138 kilovolt transmission line with larger capacity conductor wire, improve four electrical substations, plus build a new substation and a tenth of a mile of new power line. Appalachian Power spokesperson George Porter says Google is paying for the upgrades, but they'll benefit residents and companies in the region.
We're hoping that by Google coming here and we are making these upgrades, which Google is paying for this infrastructure, that'll be a snowball effect down the road, which will entice other companies to come to our location and continue with economic growth, which helps our region, brings jobs, and most importantly, lowers the customer rates for everyone across the board.
Appalachian Power is hosting a public meeting Wednesday night to answer questions about the project.
Will it be noisy? Will there be construction on my road? Will my road be blocked? You know, those are the questions that we're hoping we get on Wednesday to help answer those for those customers, because everyone's going to be impacted differently.
The open house meeting takes place at Reed Mountain Middle School from 5 to 8 p.m. I'm Mason Adams.
Sometimes it feels like there isn't much good environmental news these days. Scientists continue to warn about climate change, dangerous pollutants, and the ongoing loss of species. But here in Virginia, there's a small story of survival and hope. Sandy Hausman reports from Sussex County, where an endangered bird is coming back.
About 150 years before the American Revolution, settlers arriving on our shores found an amazing sight. 90 million acres of pine forest, stretching from what's now southeastern Virginia to Florida and Texas. Those trees would become an engine for the British Navy, supplying pitch to seal boat hulls and tar to grease wagon axles. Scientist Brian Van Eerden with the Nature Conservancy says farmers cut down more trees to grow crops, and another animal kept longleaf pines from coming back.
Feral hogs that were throughout the coastal plain in 1700s, 1800s, they foraged heavily on the seeds of longleaf pine and seedlings of longleaf pine, and then removal of fire. Longleaf pine is a species that is designed to thrive and survive in the environment of fire. If you take that away, other species like loudleaf pine will outcompete longleaf. Over the course of 400 years, that forest went down to just 200 trees that we could account for.
The destruction took a toll on species that depended on longleaf pines, like the red cockaded woodpecker. A cockade was a ribbon rosette that military men wore on their hats. These small birds are speckled with black and white feathers, but the males have a dash of red on their heads. They're also known for their industrious ways. Teams of woodpeckers create cavities in trees over months or years, providing a safe space for nesting. As the forest declined, so did the birds, their numbers falling to about 200 after Hurricane Hugo hit. Again, Brian Van Eerden with the Nature Conservancy.
The Francis Marion National Forest had the largest population of red-cockaded woodpeckers range-wide. And then the hurricane came through and just leveled the forest. And then they're exposed to the elements, and they're also exposed to predation. So getting birds into cavities is really important for population stability and growth.
That's when scientists began creating cavities in trees to house red-cockaded woodpeckers.
That's a matter of a human establishing an RCW cavity in the course of a couple of hours, which is a lot shorter than an RCW. It could take 2 years for an RCW, a group of RCWs, to excavate a cavity.
And the birds caught one other lucky break when the largest producer of timber in the U.S., International Paper, decided to sell their land in Virginia. That allowed the Nature Conservancy to buy 5,000 acres. Now they're doing controlled burns, thinning out some loblolly pines, planting longleaves, so more sun can reach the forest floor. As a diversity of plants returned, more insects appeared. Ants, beetles, caterpillars, cockroaches, and spiders. A buffet for the birds nesting above. Today, ornithologist Chance Hines scales trees in the Piney Grove Preserve in Sussex County between Richmond and Hampton Roads. He gently removes baby birds from their nests so he can weigh them and attach tiny leg bands for future identification. The parents are none too happy, but they quickly return to feed their babies once Hines has put them back.
They're still pretty pink. They don't have a lot of feathers protruding, just starting to come out of the tail, which is what happens on day six.
The babies struggle against the intruder, sometimes falling asleep, exhausted, in his hands. But they don't seem to be harmed in any way, and Hines predicts a record number of nestlings, more than 50, will survive. Already, the Center for Conservation Biology at William & Mary counts about 150 birds in the area, up from 8 25 years ago. I'm Sandy Houseman.
In the forecast, the heat will start to creep back up as we move through the week. Mostly sunny today, fairly cool. Highs only in the low to mid-70s. Could have a chance for afternoon showers late this afternoon in the southwest. Another chance for showers in the southwest tonight. Otherwise, clear and cool. Lows in the upper 40s to low 50s. Sunny and pleasant tomorrow. Highs in the low 80s for most. Mid to upper 70s in areas west. And warming Thursday. Highs near 80 in the southwest. Mid to upper 80s in areas east of the Blue Ridge. Thanks for listening to Virginia On Demand. And a little reminder, subscribe and tell your friends about it. For Radio IQ, I'm Jeff Bosser.